And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy!
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds!
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The race is on. And what at one stage looked to be a first victory for George Russell turned into a maiden triumph for Sergio Perez in a remarkable Sakhir Grand Prix. And it's a weekend that could have a big impact on the driver market landscape over the next 18 months. I'm Ed Straw, and joining me to look back on an amazing weekend are Scott Mitchell and Mark Hughes. Well, Mark, first wins are always special to witness, aren't they? We could have had two today. It was one of those days when I guess it's even more of a pleasure than usual to be in this line of work.
Yeah, I mean, it was such a thrill. It was a sort of built up the whole weekend as soon as we got news that and George would be replacing Lewis in that car. It's the excitement just built and built and built. And every step he made, every sort of bridge that he crossed, you thought, blimey, this really could be something special. And it carried through all the way into the race. And at one stage, he had a very handy lead. And it looked like it couldn't really go wrong. And at one stage, he was thinking, this is too good to be true. And it turned out that it was. But if somebody was going to pick up the pieces, it was nice that it was Checo. Because, well, obviously, for all the reasons that we've talked about all year, really, for most of the year, since it's been apparent that there was no place there for him next year. So he's performing at a very high level. He did a stupendous race today. And I'm delighted for Checo, but I'm more gutted for George than I'm delighted for Checo.
Yeah, it's going to be remembered for those two reasons for a very, very long time. And Scott, I remember you a few years ago when you were a promising, fresh-faced young motorsport journalist raving about the quality of the driver who's winning the BRDC F4 championship that you were covering. So it must have been quite special to see that particular driver doing so well today, and it just at least shows that your judgment back then was reasonably on the money.
Yeah, it's not a great indicator of my progression as a sensible person and good journalist that 6 years ago was probably my sort of peak in terms of identifying F1 worthy talents. It is good because while you always try to be as neutral as possible and don't play favourites, there is a little bit of a I do have a little bit of an affinity for George because his career's so intertwined with mine. That was my first full year working as a motorsport journalist covering BRDC Formula 4 and various other series. And it was George's first year in cars. I got to know him really well that year. From his very first race through to the peak moments, the climaxes at the end of the year, and I've maintained a good relationship with him ever since then. So it is sometimes a bit weird to think that it's that same driver, that sort of say it's that same like 16-year-old beanstalk that was so much taller than everyone else he was racing with in F4, but just had that little, just had something extra about him, and you just thought, I think this kid's special, but you've got no idea how far they're going to go. And I think we've had the absolute ultimate vindication this weekend with a stunning stand-in performance at Mercedes, that George Russell can go to some pretty special places if he's given the right opportunities.
Yeah, it was absolutely, regardless of the fact that the result on paper isn't anything special, the performance is what matters, and that will live long in the memory. But so much to talk about. We're going to start off, Mark, with Sergio Perez, the man of the hour, a Grand Prix winner at the 190th attempt. That's longer than anyone else has taken. He's worked long and hard for this, hasn't he? And he just thoroughly deserves that victory.
Yeah, true. I remember when he came in as a Ferrari junior driver in the Sauber team, and he was pulling off some pretty special performances then. Even way back then, one of the key distinguishing features of his performances was how good he was with the tyres. And he would pull off unlikely stint lengths, and that stayed with him throughout. I mean, it was, you know, just a cornerstone to his success today as well, because he was effectively on a one stop strategy, wasn't he? That was, he stopped twice, but once was on the first lap to put a new set on after he'd flat spotted it through being spun out. So yeah, he has been delivering very, very high caliber race performances probably since his post McLaren days. That McLaren season, it didn't really click for him in 2013. But ever since then, even though he's been at lesser teams than that, he's really, really been consistently excellent on race day. Not the fastest qualifier in the world, but consistently excellent on race day. And yeah, you just felt that if ever an opportunity fell into his grasp, he would absolutely nail it. I didn't have any doubt about that. It was just whether that opportunity was ever going to come.
Yeah, well, he absolutely seized it, and there was just no concern was there. And that point you make about right from the start, everyone always forgets that he actually finished seventh on the road on his Grand Prix debut in that Australian Grand Prix. I think he may have been the only driver who won stop that day before the Saubers were excluded for an infringement on the rear wing. But it's always been there, that quality. And obviously the big talking point with Perez is the fact that he doesn't have a drive for next year currently. So Scott, this is just absolutely the time he needs this, doesn't it? Because the Red Bull vacancy is still there. They're trying to do everything they possibly can not to take an alternative to Alex Albon. But when you look at Perez winning, and this is a race where the three drivers, Albon, needed to be either gone from the race or hobbled in the race by problems. There was Albon in sixth place, so de facto ninth place, and nowhere near picking up the pieces, whereas Perez was the man who did it.
Yeah, when you were saying this was the time, I thought you were going to go down the route of saying this is the time where you just wind me up and let me loose for a minute or two to talk about this, because obviously
I didn't think you needed any winding up on this topic. You're absolutely on top of it.
No, that's what I mean. I thought you'd just go, right, here we go. This is how we fill out a good percentage of the podcast. We just get Scott angry and talking about Perez and particularly Albon. Because liking Perez and noticing Perez's ability as a racing driver is absolutely not a unique or special observation on my part, but just I've just grown increasingly frustrated over the last couple of months that he's in the situation that he's in. I think we all felt it was a massive injustice that he is being forced out of Racing Point just as it transitions to Aston Martin, because this was supposed to be the big break in his career that he does deserve. But as for 2020, I do believe that Perez has raised his game again. I think he's on the highest level he's ever operated on as a driver. And I believe there is now no competitive justification for Red Bull not signing Perez and keeping Albon, because I really like Alex. I've known him for a long time. I think he's a lovely bloke. And when things align for him, he's also a really fast driver, and he's a great racing driver as well. He's pulled off some great moves this year, but it's not working at Red Bull. I don't think it's ever going to work at Red Bull. And when there's a driver of Perez's availability on the market, I just think a team with the competitive desires, the interests and the ambition that Red Bull has, you can't keep persevering with what you've got in Albon when someone like Perez is available, because drivers of Perez's caliber do not become out of contract as easily as there's this amazing quality of driver there just waiting to be picked up by Red Bull. I can't believe that they're still waiting. And I think this win has come at such a good time. Because as you say, it's the circumstances around it as well. This was a race with both Mercedes out of the picture for different reasons, Verstappen out on the first lap. It should have been the second Red Bull winning, right? Like in any other situation, the second driver in the second fastest car should be picking up the pieces. And how Albon's allowed not only another driver to take the win instead, but the driver who's linked to his seat and a driver who was pitched off on the first lap has been able to win this race when Albon couldn't. It's all rooted in his fundamental pace deficit in qualifying that meant it's not even that Albon missed his opportunity to win today. He was nowhere near, he wasn't even in the picture because of how far down he started because of his pace deficit.
Yeah, ultimately, we've got no problem with Albon being behind Verstappen. But it's a question of the magnitude, isn't it? And the trajectory that he's on. Now, Mark, can you make a strong case for them keeping Albon? We know he's got underlying ability. You know, he's a likable character. We'd like to see him doing well, but it's just getting increasingly hard to build a compelling defence, isn't it?
Yeah, I can't build a case. It's he's not there able to support Verstappen. He's not there able to put undercut pressure on whoever Verstappen is fighting to try and pull them off the back of Verstappen. He's you know, he didn't even get into Q3 this time. Nothing's changing. It's not like it's a direction of progress. It's just stop start. If vague hints of promise, then you know they dashed. You know, one race later, there is no pattern. This is just how it is.
Yeah, I looked at the data after the year's qualifying data after what happened. Obviously, as Mark said, knocked out in Q2. Obviously, it's the first time since it would have been, I think, the first Silverstone race that Albon's not made Q3. But the really worrying thing, actually looking back at the qualifying sessions this year in detail, is that the I don't know the best way to put it, but like the percentage difference between Max and Alex to the absolute fastest. Alex hasn't made any progress all year. He's still around about 0.7% further away from the front than Max is, and it doesn't matter whether the Red Bull's competitive. It doesn't matter if the Red Bull's a second off one at one track or four tenths off at another track. Whatever the actual lap time is at the front, Albon's always 0.7% pretty much further away than Max, and you can park a bus in that gap. That is enormous, and that is why he got knocked out of Q2 in the Sakhir Grand Prix qualifying, because the gap to Max was actually pretty much where it's been all season. The difference was that on the outer circuit at Bahrain, about, what was it, 9 cars managed to fill that gap. So it looked utterly terrible, but it was actually as mediocre as Alex has been all season, to be honest.
Yeah, his average deficit to Verstappen is actually bigger than Nicholas Latifi's to George.
Yeah, that says a lot, unfortunately, doesn't it? And he's just butting up against the same ceiling of performance, isn't he? It's a shame, but he's in one of the best two teams in Formula One, so the stakes are pretty high and the expectations are high. And this is just magnified, isn't it, by how classy Perez is, how dependable he is. He's not absolutely the fastest driver over a single lap on Saturday. Still quick, though. Still effective, just not the absolute quickest. But as we saw, he can just turn in such a good race drive. Now, Mark, if we can just set aside the Mercedes situation for the moment, obviously for Perez to win, he had to win the midfield fight. So how did he pull that off? Because, in fact, I've just got the replay of the race. It's just got to that in front of me. He's pointing backwards in the middle of turn 4 on lap 1, and he takes the restart 18th and last, And yet somehow he's managed to win that midfield battle, to be the guy who inherits the win. How did he achieve that?
Well, it was obvious he was going to win once he was spun at turn four on lap one, wasn't it? now, to take nothing away from Sergio's performance, which was fantastic, and in particular, the crucial passes he made, in particular on Ocon and Stroll. He wasn't in a car that was quick enough to get through to Q3 on the medium, so he was obliged to start on the softs, and that was a strategic disadvantage. Sometimes it doesn't make much difference, but today it did. You didn't really want to be starting the race on the softs. The Racing Point is actually very good. Sergio himself is very good with the tyres, as we know, but the Racing Point has become a very good car on the tyres as well. And we saw Lance Stroll do a very long stint on the softs, far longer than anyone else. But so that's one thing, is that lap one spin, followed immediately by a safety car, meant that he was able to get in, get rid of those softs, and be on the mediums. So, yes, that helped him. He then had to absolutely, you know, not get stuck. He had to do the passes. He had to do them quickly, and he had to make it work. But the crucial passes were those on his own teammate Stroll, and that might have been a difficult thing to do had Stroll not made that lockup mistake on his outlap after his pit stop, which is what enabled Sergio to go past and then subsequently a lap later to do Ocon as well, because two cars in the same team, it might have, you know, not quite as straightforward to do a pass. We saw earlier in the season they came close to touching at Barcelona, I think it was, and the team ended up putting them on different strategies to keep them out of each other's way. So the fact that Lance sort of handed that to him made it much simpler and probably saved him several laps trying to work out how to find his way through. So I think they were the keys. The fact that he was able to get onto a better tyre strategy just as a nice sort of side effect, really, of getting punted off on the first lap. And then he did the big moves when he had to, and he combined that with his usual fantastic combination of pace and tyre usage.
Yeah, and even clearing the slower cars effortlessly almost in the early laps after the restart was important as well, just minimising that time loss. Again, something we haven't always seen someone like Alex Albon do this year. He's pulled off some good moves, but sometimes he has had periods when he's got stuck. But Stroll, obviously you mentioned there, this was the second race this season that there was a pathway for Lance Stroll to win. He said it himself after the race that he was a little bit disappointed. Third place is still good. But Scott, if you were Lance Stroll, you'd be a little bit disappointed it wasn't you up there celebrating having made that mistake with a lockup at turn one?
If you're in a position where you're looking at a guy who's finished ahead of you in the race and you've had track position over them at a crucial phase, then you're only going to be, unless they've got a faster car or some kind of advantage, then you're going to be disappointed to fall behind them. And it was self-inflicted. It was just that there were a couple of moments where it just seemed like, distracted is not the right word, but Lance just a couple of mistakes. There was that one in battle, which was, I think, him just getting outraced, basically. I just don't think he had the composure when he needed it. But there was also that really odd bit behind the safety car, like behind the just before the restart, where he seemed, I don't know what it was, but I think it looked like he thought that they were going. So he absolutely gunned it and then had to stamp on the brakes to avoid piling into what would have been the back of Ocon, I suppose. And locked up again there. So, I guess at different phases of the race, Stroll's tyres can't have been the roundest circles to drive on.
And Perez himself said he had a lockup under the safety car as well, so had a few vibrations on that set of mediums, so that made life a bit more difficult for him. But really, really well executed and utterly fantastic for that team as well. This, of course, is the old Jordan team. It was Jordan, Midland, Spyker, Force India. There was the risk of it going out of business a few years ago. Really high quality group of people there who've achieved a huge amount with less than you would normally need to achieve the huge amount they're achieving. So for them to get this win, and I think also to get it with Perez, the guy who's been there all the way back to 2014, just it's great they get to have this special day before the Aston Martin switch next year, isn't it, Mark?
Yeah, that's right. And it's been under so many different guises. It's won races as Jordan, of course, first of all. But it is nice, and it's nice that we've got another team winning a race this year. You know, it's in terms of performance, Mercedes have been so dominant, but we've had four different teams winning in these 16 races to date. So as well as Mercedes and Red Bull, we've had AlphaTauri in our Racing Point, and that just seems right because they are the best of the rest. You know, in terms of performance, they are clearly the third fastest team. It looks like, they might. Where are they in the constructor? Where does that put them? Does that put them back in third?
Yeah, they're back in third. I'm just flicking. I think they're 10 points clear. Yeah.
So
10
that
points clear.
That you know the perform. It's nice when the performance and the results align, and I think that would be the rightful place for them.
Yeah, we've got to remember they lost that 15 points, didn't they, for the illegally designed rear brake ducts? But I think that's probably finished off McLaren's challenge. But there's still one race to go. You never know. But yeah, just great day for that team, and I'm just really pleased to see Sergio Perez getting a win because he's worked so hard at it all the way back to the days when he first came over to Europe and he was just a guy who didn't speak the language living in a room above a pub restaurant. And just he's constantly evolved and constantly improved himself. That season at McLaren could have finished off other drivers, and he didn't always cover himself in glory with his approach, but he's just got better and better and better, and he's still got plenty of years left ahead of him. Just before we move on to the Mercedes situation, we should go back to that first lap incident with Charles Leclerc. 3-place grid penalty for the Abu Dhabi season finale for Leclerc. For that, obviously, he clouted Perez. Scott, what did you make of that? I appreciate I've just asked you that question while you're taking a drink of what I assume is tea.
You assume correctly. You are a very astute observation. The wonders of Zoom. I don't know if that's me slapping my arm in sort of it was obviously Leclerc's fault has made that onto the recording device. We shall see. But yeah, it was a slam dunk as far as I'm concerned. I don't think Leclerc was wrong to try what he did. You saw the three cars ahead going side by side, and he was right not to get properly stuck into it. But then when Verstappen sort of thought better of it and backed out, that was an opportunity for Leclerc to gain a position on the inside. But they knew from the reconnaissance laps that the track was quite dusty and it seemed to be particularly low grip there. Several cars had moments into that corner on the first lap. Being that far over to the right-hand side, I mean, it's all well and good. You could argue that maybe Perez didn't leave a huge amount of room at the apex, but Perez wasn't defending from Leclerc, was he? And Leclerc wasn't attacking Perez. Leclerc was trying to overtake Verstappen and carried so much speed in that he overtook Verstappen and ended up, well, not quite overtaking Perez, but hitting him. And then it could have ruined Perez's race. Obviously, it didn't really, did it? Perez's race ended up being quite good after that. But it took Verstappen out on the spot. Although I guess you could argue that maybe Max didn't handle his moment off track. He seemed to boot the throttle, I think, which made things a little bit worse. But yeah, Leclerc, I think, was banged to rights. He even admitted if there is anyone to blame in the incident, it's him. I thought he might get away with it because they have a little bit of leniency on the first lap, but I think this was just sort of, this was in his control and it was avoidable. So I think 3 places is probably fair.
And we should note the third time that's happened with him this year, versions of that on the first lap with Vettel in the Styrian Grand Prix and with Lance Stroll at Sochi. Slightly different, but similar, if you see what I mean. It's a real shame because Charles Leclerc turned in probably one of the qualifying laps of the season. The only reason I say probably is because Leclerc himself, you'd have to sift through his group of extraordinary qualifying laps to decide which was the best of those, because he's done this a lot of times. So it was just a brilliant Saturday, but a horrible Sunday for him, wasn't it, Mark? And just shows that there's still a few little rough edges there for him to iron out.
Yeah, and it comes just out with that race. One race after Seb was so vociferous on the radio about how aggressive he was on the first lap and the restarts. He's pulling every little thing there is and probably a bit more from that Ferrari. And I don't think he feels that he can turn down any even half sniff of an opportunity because he's qualifying it above where it should be, and so he knows he's probably just in for an afternoon of fading back down to the car's natural level, and the longer he can delay that, or the more opportunities he can take to put, you know, faster cars behind him for at least a while, that's the route to an overachieving result. But yeah, it comes with high risk. But I guess he's thinking, well, if it's high risk, it's not as if we're losing a championship, is it? It's just to try and grab some respectability from this semi uncompetitive car that we have. So yeah, I can see where his attitude come from, but it was unsuitable on a track that had been made very dusty, very slippery by the wind, and been a few hours since there'd been any cars on it. It was several hours after the F2 race, so it was very slippery, and it probably wasn't the most appropriate attitude to be taken onto the first lap on this occasion.
Right, let's move on to the topic of Mercedes. First up, Scott, you've spent lots of this weekend following George Russell extremely closely. Effectively, he won this race twice, didn't he? Once with a straightforward take the lead at the start and dominate strategy. Then he was on course to fight through from fifth place before he got that puncture. Ninth place and fastest lap, scant reward. But he couldn't have seized his opportunity better, could he?
No, this was mega. Mercedes tried to sort of give him slightly reduced expectations going into this weekend because there was obviously quite a lot of hype around it, especially once we got closer to practice on Friday. So Mercedes told him that basically top five, top six in qualifying and top five in the race would be good. George had privately set himself the target of being within a couple of tenths of Bottas. But from the moment they started in Friday practice, it was clear that George wasn't just going to take the easy road to sort of, one weekend, maybe I'll get another one next weekend, but all I want to do is not make any mistakes, so I'm just going to build up. He just cracked on with it. And when I say that, I don't mean that from the start of FP1, he was obsessed with setting the fastest lap times or anything like this. It just meant that he took the situation really seriously. And he did everything within his power to make that his car, as much as he could make it his car, given how late the decision was for him to drive. And, you know, he was in a three-year-old seat. He was wearing one size too small race boots. The clutch paddles aren't molded for him, so they were, I think, a bit too small for his fingers. The straps on the seat were digging into his shoulders, so it was a physically uncomfortable and not optimized opportunity for him, to be honest. And yet, by the time he gets to qualifying, he's, 200ths of a second from pole. And then at the start, he absolutely nails the start as best as he can from the dirty side of the grid, gets in front of Bottas, does absolutely everything right through the Grand Prix, including, and I'll probably be waxing lyrical about this in written form for an article on the site in the morning, one of, if not the best overtakes of the year on Bottas, where after he'd lost track position and was running in fifth after the initial pit stop blunder, just that sort of, I loved everything about that overtake because it was a couple of corners in the making. He sort of suckered Bottas in, but Bottas went deep. Bottas then went deep into turn five, and George had the opportunity to go around the outside of him through turn six, which is really bumpy. And it wasn't like he had such a big run that he sort of steamed past on the outside. He had to properly tough it out on the outside and then get the braking done for the turn seven, eight tight chicane. I honestly thought that was such a brilliant overtake considering what was on the line and what he'd risked losing. If he got that wrong, he'd probably speared right into Bottas and taken both Mercedes out. So it was a properly on the edge pass. And just everything he did, he handled himself with professionalism, maturity, good grace, even though he had that result taken away from him. I can't honestly think of anything he could have done that would have realistically been better. Obviously, 200ths of a second off of pole, you can say, maybe he should have got pole there. But really, on reflection, that is a really phenomenal debut with the team.
The important thing is that he just looked utterly at home in a big team at the front, even though he had every reason not to look utterly at home. He'd never been in that situation in F1 before. While he's familiar with the team, he's not embedded in it. He's up against a driver in Valtteri Bottas who knows the car and its predecessors absolutely inside out. And what he did on merit to effectively win that race, because that pass on Bottas as well, after the initial setback that Russell had, was really a pass for victory, wasn't it? Because it was inevitable thereafter that he would get through into the lead had he not had that puncture. I felt Russell did have this about him, that ability to absolutely maximise this. And you do see this, don't you, Mark? When there's a driver like this given an opportunity like this, they don't just sort of let themselves off and just sort of drive around and finish a nice solid third, do they? They take those opportunities. And I guess that was no more exemplified than that moment he passed Bottas.
Yeah, that's right. We talked about it in the George Russell piece we did pre-weekend. And I think we both agreed that his personality is such that he's not one of those guys. Some people under the spotlight sort of shrink, and others shine, and he's one of the latter. And you just felt that if he got the opportunity, he would absolutely nail it. And yeah, that was just encapsulated with that pass. Valtteri just went a little bit wide into turn four, and that was it. That's all he needed, and didn't really matter that it was a marginal move. He had the full confidence and the commitment to pull it off, and it was up to Valtteri not to get in the way once he, you know, committed to it. So yeah, just all round starring performance, really. It's given Toto Wolff a real headache. And I thought Toto tonight was not that. I thought it would be more emphatic in saying, no, it doesn't change anything. Our lineup is absolute this. He did say those words, but he didn't say them in a way that sounded like he was convinced about it. And then even George himself added to that later on, saying, you know, it would be nice to get back into that car, maybe even sooner than 2022. So, yeah, I think they do have a little bit of a headache. I think logically, it shouldn't change anything. For us, as you know, for outsiders looking in, for the fans, absolutely, we want to see George in there. But I think if from the perspective of the team, probably not. I think I'd be surprised if it happens earlier than 22.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it has an effect on Valtteri Bottas as well, because he's been very good at picking himself up after being beaten by Lewis Hamilton over these years. But this is just another beating he's taken. He's a very, very good driver, Bottas, but this wasn't the weekend he needed, was it? So I guess, Scott, the real question is that Mercedes have to ask. It's what's the dynamic, isn't it? While they've got Hamilton there, Hamilton-Bottas seems to work quite well. But I guess now that Russell has eliminated so many of the hypotheticals that are in the positives column for him, hypothetically he could do what he did this weekend. Now we know he did what he did this weekend, so he's ticked more boxes. So that does, I guess, create a little bit of a headache, doesn't it?
Yeah, it definitely does. And I think it's validation for a lot of people, including George. You know, George said on Sunday evening that, you know, he and Williams like to think that they're doing a really good job and getting a lot out of their situations, but there's always this nagging feeling where you're like, if someone else came in and did something slightly differently, could they get more out of it? And as he's acknowledged and Toto's acknowledged, well, he's just stepped in the fastest car in the grid and gone 0.02 of a second slower than a guy who's been in it all season and has beaten Lewis. What does Valtteri beat Lewis? Like one in every three qualifying sessions? So, yeah, like George is getting the most out of that Williams. You can say that with certainty. But the big thing for me is that he's proven, he's taken any uncertainty about whether he can handle the pressure and fit into that environment. Because that for me is one of those, he joins that sort of elite group of drivers who they get that opportunity and they grab it straight away. You know, like Lewis's debut in Melbourne in 2007, or Max's opportunity when the Mercs wiped themselves out on his Red Bull debut in Spain in 2016. You get that chance, and then all of a sudden you grab it, and you're not leaving any doubt whatsoever, because now, even if George didn't race in Abu Dhabi next weekend, the next time Toto is sitting down and having to think about the drivers, whether it's because he thinks there is a way to get George in the car next year, or it's next May and they're thinking about the 2022 lineup, you can't, that hypothetical about George, or but would he be able to cut it in the car, that won't be there anymore. So he's basically added a couple of really, really important pros into the pro column, and he's eliminated one or two from the cons column as well. So I think this has just been tremendous for George's value.
Yeah, it's just a weekend where he's absolutely proved himself. Let's delve a little bit into the detail. Now, the first part of the race was pretty simple. Russell ended up in the lead. Bottas was about 2 seconds behind. And then coming up towards the pit stop, Russell did manage to just inch out a few more tenths here and there overall as well. So it was all very settled until things start to go wrong. So Mark, by a quirk of fate, it was actually Russell's stand-in at Williams, Jack Aitken, who inadvertently created the conditions for Russell to lose the race and Mercedes to have a disaster. So if you take us back to, what was it, about lap 60, when Russell's leading, Bottas is second, all looks relatively settled for a run to the flag, and then Aitken crashes off the last corner. So what goes wrong from that point for Mercedes?
Yeah, at first it was just a VSC, and then it was a full safety car. And they decided quite a lot earlier in the race that if this happened, they wouldn't just stay with the one-stop strategy on the old tyres, because they felt it would be too vulnerable on a restart. So it was already pre-planned that should there be a safety car during this window, they would stop, because they had such a big gap over the third place. They would stop and they would change tyres. And they were able to do that and stack them. But it came at such short notice. I mean, basically, George was almost upon the pit entry when the safety car was thrown. The instructions went out to the... So you have the crew in the garage and the crew in the pit lane. The crew in the garage on George's side didn't hear the radio transmission that went out for some reason that's yet to be determined. So only Valtteri's tyres were brought out. So George comes in first, and those guys just fit the tyres that are there on the assumption that they are George's. George leaves after a fairly routine sort of stop, but then there aren't any tyres for Valtteri, or they're not a full set. And it then becomes apparent that Valtteri's tyres are already on George's car, hence a double problem. And yeah, that's sort of where it went wrong, a radio problem. So on one side of the garage, and they've probably been done thousands and thousands of times. I've used those radios, and in this time, as it was on that cusp, it happened that way. So all wasn't lost at that point, as we know. George still, they put the corrective stop on when the race was still under the safety car, so didn't lose all that much time. Just put him down to his fifth place behind Valtteri, and Valtteri still had the old tyres on. So he was, once he'd made that move and passed Valtteri, and it got past Ocon and Stroll, and was closing down on Sergio, the piece of debris he picked up was at turn 10, and which is almost certainly another piece of Jack Aitken's wing. So poor old Jack lost George the race twice.
Yeah, it's just one of those little quirks, isn't it? of fate, nothing, not Aitken's fault as such, but just was the cause of it. It's one of those things that sometimes you can criticise teams for the decisions they make, but both the decision that was made to make those precautionary pit stops and the nature of the error that happened, it just seemed to be one of those things, doesn't it? Just an extraordinary alignment of circumstances that caused it. So just the usually well-drilled team, it just came undone for them. So I guess we can't criticise them too heavily for that. But yeah, occasionally these days happen, I guess, even for that team. But I don't think there's any doubt that Russell would have caught and passed Perez, is there?
Sergio says he's confident he could have kept on behind, but and Sergio is certainly a very, very difficult man to pass if he decides you don't want to be passed. But yes, I think George comfortably had the pace to have been able to do it with a bit of DRS help. Yes, I do.
Yeah, it seemed fairly inevitable. So that's how we ended up with Russell winning the race effectively two times, or being on trajectory to win it two times. Just absolutely remarkable. There's lots of other little subplots as well beyond this, and the implications of Perez's win and Russell's performance and how worried Valtteri Bottas is. We should talk about Esteban Ocon, who finished second. This midfield fight, there was kind of a split between the one-stoppers and the two-stoppers, wasn't there? Ocon had underachieved a little bit in qualifying, didn't make Q3, but that had the advantage that he was the lead driver in that midfield battle, who was on mediums. Only the two Mercs of the top 10 started on the mediums. But it was a good solid drive from Ocon, wasn't it, Scott? And a good breakthrough for him to get that first podium. Okay, there was a little bit of good fortune, but he managed to get past Stroll after the pit stop, having attempted to undercut him, not quite done it, but then passed him in the second DRS zone. And just an important box to tick, isn't it? Getting actually what is Renault's best result since they've come back.
Yeah, and I can't profess this to be a tremendous bit of foresight, but I remember messaging you sort of relatively early, I think, in the first stint, saying Ocon looks like he's got a good chance at a podium here, because he was at the back of that midfield, the leading midfield train at the start. But obviously he was the first one. He would have been on the mediums, right? When everyone, when the guys...
Yes, he was the first one on the mediums.
The guys in front were on the softs. And I was just thinking, you know, if this plays out where the strategy to be on the mediums and then the hard is several seconds faster by the end of the race, Esteban's actually got a really good chance of getting to the head of this train, because obviously Perez has been removed. He's not coming back. There's no way he's coming through the field. And I just thought, this could work quite well, because Esteban's actually, he's fair play to him. He has properly chipped away at it. I thought he was going to permanently be at that sort of 2-3 temps off Ricardo level all season. But I think once he got that, I probably can't use the word on the podcast, I was about to say, once he got that verbal hiding after the immediately after the race at Monza, do you remember when he was properly moaning over the radio and he basically got told to shut it? There's been a shift, and he's worked really well with the team, and he's got quicker and he's got better. He's started to rise to the challenge. And so this was really nice, because he's a driver that I really rate, and I think there have been some really good performances this year from him. And obviously Ricardo getting those two podiums, Renault's first of this version of the works team, all of that absolutely deserved from Daniel. Wasn't like Esteban hadn't got something he'd earned, but it's just nice for him to have a bit of, you know, a slice of the congratulations and the joy. It has been a difficult season. I'm sure this will massively kick him on, because he's not going to have it any easier in the garage next year, is he, when Ricardo moves on? Because I can't think of a worse person to replace Ricardo with than Fernando Alonso. So yeah, this is for many reasons, this is really good for Ocon.
Yeah, and we should remember as well that Ocon is Mercedes connected as well. He's got that deal with Renault, but there's an underlying deal as well that could mean he's a driver who could be considered by Mercedes. I guess Russell has further advanced his cause to be ahead of Ocon in that pecking order, but such results are important, doubly so with the fact that people are saying, well, maybe Renault could look at a Gasly or someone like that for 2022. So this is good for Ocon. And he did have to work for it, because although he was on that correct strategy, still had to pass Stroll. He attacked courtesy of an undercut, but he still had to make the move. So yeah, he gained a place, and it turned out to be the second place. I guess the driver who we feel a little bit sorry for in this is Carlos Sainz in the McLaren, who was the lead two-stopper, if you like, of those. Obviously, we're using this sort of one-stopper and two-stopper terminology. It got a bit messier later on, but that those were basically the two competing strategies. And so Sainz ended up from a race that could have yielded third place, or even second, actually, the way things panned out, with fourth place. But just another classy drive from Sainz, and it's hard to see he could have done anything else with the way it panned out.
Yeah, it was a good standard Sainz professional drive. Faultless, really. He made a little bit of a lock-up as he was attempting to take second place from Valtteri early in the race when he was on the soft tyres and Valtteri's on the hard, but fairly innocuous. Just a standard, lovely performance, really. Just happened to be on the wrong strategy, courtesy of having qualified in the top 10 and having to start on the soft. Yeah, just he's very, very, very difficult to pinpoint any weakness in Carlos these days. Really looking forward to seeing how he and Leclerc operate and compare.
Yeah, that's going to be really interesting. It's funny, that group, because you ended up with Sainz fourth, Ricciardo fifth, Albon sixth, Kvyat seventh, and they were just the kind of set of that group on the strategy. Obviously, Kvyat, there's very little you can say about his race, really the same with Ricciardo as well. Albon obviously was a bit further up and it just didn't come off for him, but they were their finishing positions were defined really by the strategies they were on compared to those other midfield group drivers. But good for Kvyat. He reckoned this was his best qualifying of the year. You had a little bit of sympathy for Kvyat a few weeks ago, didn't you, Scott, when you wrote that piece about how nobody seems to care that he's sliding out of F1, and with Yuki Tsunoda making sure he's got the super license points, it's now a foregone conclusion, it seems, that he'll be in the car. But nice for Kvyat to at least remind everyone that when everything comes together, he can deliver a good, strong drive. Ahead of Gasly, of course, who ended up in 11th place.
But he's done that a few times of late. I haven't seen a weekend quite as complete as this for a long time, though, in terms of just sort of being quick and executing it when he had to. But, yeah, I mean, sympathy. I don't know how much sympathy I have for him. What I just thought was a bit unfortunate and arguably unfair is that, probably because we've already said goodbye to him once before, he is a driver who has started more than 100 races. He has represented Red Bull in F1, I think, has met pretty much as many times as Max Verstappen has, for example. And don't think anyone started more races for him for the second team, Toro Rosso or AlphaTauri. And, you know, what's he got? 3 podium finishes as well? That's a respectable career. And I think it's a career that shouldn't be sniffed at. I'm not saying he should be celebrated, and I'm not saying he should have a drive for next year. But I was just thinking, his exit is going to be arguably the most understated exit from a Red Bull driver in Formula One. I think the only person I can think of that people cared less about leaving was Brendan Hartley, because he was just such a random person to come back in, to come into F1. No one really cared that he was leaving. Kvyat's just had I feel like he should have had more of an impression on people than he has. And it is just nice, I think, to see him bowing out of F1 with a reminder of why he was so highly rated by Red Bull in the first place.
At least he won't get the Scott Speed send-off. That's the thing he can be happy about. But, yeah, a good performance. Yeah, Gasly did some floor damage in qualifying, which I think led to him being behind. Generally, he has been outperformed by Gasly over the past 18 months. There's no doubt about that. So it's not an outrageous decision. But I guess it's not helped by the fact that they still haven't confirmed Tsunoda's in the seat. But I presume that confirmation is going to come very, very shortly. But, yeah, a nice seventh-place finish ahead of Bottas, who ended up fading to 8th. There wasn't much he could have done about it on the wrong set of tyres, as it were, with George Russell in 9th place. Consolation of fastest lap. So I guess if nothing else, George Russell has got that point stuck broken. And Lando Norris, of course, had a pretty difficult weekend through to 10th. Things didn't go very well for him in qualifying. Sent out, he reckoned, at the wrong time. He's right at the front of everyone in that final Q2 run. They had to go so slowly to avoid catching the people who were coming out late, that the tyres weren't there. Then he couldn't get a lap in because of traffic at the second attempt. So ended up 15th, yeah, ahead of Gasly and Sebastian Vettel. In that battle at the back, Antonio Giovinazzi 13th from Kimi Raikkonen, 14th. Raikkonen had a spin on the first lap with Kevin Magnussen 15th. But actually a word from Nicholas Latifi, because he was leading that Class C battle when he had an oil leak. A decent race drive from him. Very disappointing qualifying again. Struggled and was almost out-qualified by Aitken. But Latifi's a pretty safe pair of hands in the races, and he would have deserved that Class C victory. But I guess Jack Aitken's the real story there. Finished 16th, had the crash. What did you make of what you saw of Aitken on his Grand Prix debut, Mark?
That was very respectable, given that he's just thrown straight in there. As you say, almost he came close to out-qualifying his teammate. Not the most celebrated of teammates, but, no mug. And so he was at a similar level of performance there straight away. Didn't look disgraced in Formula One at all. I thought very, very solid debut performance.
Yeah, and he had Raikkonen beaten in the race before he had that off. He admitted, when I spoke to him after the race, that he maybe was pushing a little bit too hard because he wanted to catch that group of cars in front, but at least he just about got away with it. He was in the wall, but he managed to finish, so tick that box. He said he was pretty happy with it, but obviously that off disappointed him. He finished 16th behind Kevin Magnussen in 15th. Magnussen, I think, had his fairly traditional good start, but Gravity is undefeatable, and the Haas isn't a great car. And also Pietro Fittipaldi finished last and 17th on his stand-in performance for Romain Grosjean. Of course, we know that Fittipaldi will definitely be racing in Abu Dhabi this weekend as well, because Grosjean will not be fit with the burns he suffered last weekend. Fittipaldi I followed a lot this weekend. I think he did a pretty tidy job, Scott. He was struggling a bit with braking, but worked methodically, didn't disgrace himself at all in the race, and showed he's a safe pair of hands, didn't he?
Yeah, and I think considering he's not been in a racing car for... Well, I don't think he's been in a race car all year, has he, Pietro?
No, February the 22nd, Buriram Asian F3, where he finished third in the last race of the day. I just remember that somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know, obviously, you've harking back to your days in February where you were keeping an eye on Asian F3 just for kicks, and you just remember it, I assume.
Hey, Asian F3 has been significant in the world of super license points.
It has. Is it Nikita Mazepin who it sort of helped to a super license? There you go. See, anything you can do, I can do better. Fittipaldi, I thought, did actually a really good job. It just begs the question, though, doesn't it? How good a job of Louis Delatraz have done?
Funnily enough, Günther Steiner was asked about Delatraz again after the race, about the Delatraz issue. He was very, very dismissive about Louis Delatraz after the race, more dismissive even than he had been previously in the weekend.
Can I give this a bit more context in case people don't know what we're talking about?
Oh,
it's incredible. So basically, obviously, Roman's terrible accident and his injury meant that he was ruled out. And as soon as that happened, Haas called upon its reserve driver, Pietro Fittipaldi. Pietro and Louis Delatraz share that reserve driver duty. Delatraz was in Bahrain, but he was racing in Formula 2, and Pietro was asked to come out and spend 3 weeks in the Middle East for two races in Bahrain and one in Abu Dhabi, because they were worried about having a COVID case out here, and because of the way the structure is here, especially getting into Abu Dhabi, Steiner wanted Haas's reserve to be properly on site. So Fittipaldi made the sacrifice and committed to 3 weeks out in the Middle East without any guarantee whatsoever that he'd do anything other than quarantine, basically, and stand in the garage. And Fittipaldi's done, I think, 7 days of testing in the Haas. Delatraz has done one. That was back in 2018, I think. Pietro did 6 of his 7 days of testing last year, so he knows the car very well, and he's been massively embedded in the team with a mix of simulated duties and on-site work in the background. In other words, Pietro is an incredibly well accomplished and embedded reserve driver. And so Steiner picked him, partly because he was also the nominated reserve for this weekend, which triggered a really, let's call it unprofessional response from Delatraz, who basically, based on how he responded to other announcements that followed that, he basically was accusing Haas of being disrespectful towards its reserve drivers, and then he started liking a series of anti-Haas tweets basically on Twitter, to which Steiner said he doesn't have to ask anyone permission for who he decides to put into the car, least of all Delatraz. And I absolutely right, because while Delatraz might be the slightly faster of the two as a junior single seater driver, Fittipaldi is, as far as I'm concerned, more qualified to be the person you plug into the car at the last minute.
Yeah, a little bit of an own goal from Delatraz, who's a handy driver with a solid record, but hasn't covered himself in glory there. And of course, Romain Grosjean was on site in Bahrain this weekend. Well worth having a look at his story. We had on Friday morning a press conference with him, and he just spoke for 6-7 minutes, just talking through those 28 seconds of the crash. Really well worth looking. If you have a look on the race.com, and don't forget the hyphen, the headline's "I'm at peace, I'm dying." That's his quote. Grosjean tells full story of the crash. And it's well worth a read, because it was just absolutely gripping listening to that. But now we have the question of what next, don't we? We've got the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix this weekend. We don't currently know what Lewis Hamilton's status is, but what we do know from what Toto Wolff has said is that he's not one of these completely asymptomatic cases. So it's a question of, A, can he test negative in time? And B, will he be let into Abu Dhabi, which The first, obviously, we don't know. The second isn't a foregone conclusion, even if A is achieved. But Mark, while we don't want Lewis Hamilton to suffer or anything, it'd be no bad thing to have the chance to see Russell have another go, to see how he builds on it, because this is such a good weekend. Abu Dhabi's probably a slightly more difficult challenge in a way.
It will be. I mean, I wouldn't bet against George achieving anything after the display we've just seen this weekend. But yeah, the one struggle he was having in qualifying at this circuit was in turn one, where you need a slower corner with a lot of rotation early in the corner. And I think you did a piece on it, very, very nice piece, well worth a look at, of how his muscle memory from the Williams was sort of holding him back a little bit, and he couldn't quite, just grasp just what the Mercedes was able to do, how aggressive you could hustle it into that sort of corner without the back being wayward. And the last sector of Abu Dhabi is full of those sort of corners. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if he's nailed that just in the process of doing the race. But if he is still struggling with that aspect of the car, it will be shown up in that sector if indeed he does the race.
Yeah, obviously we'll get an idea later this week. Well, we'll know later this week. They'll have to decide exactly what the situation is. Obviously, we know Fittipaldi's in at Haas. Aitken will be in at Williams if Russell is in the Mercedes. But hopefully Lewis Hamilton also will be clear of COVID as soon as possible. And then we'll see if he's allowed into Abu Dhabi. I suspect the authorities will bend the rules to let him in, even though I'm sure they won't compromise on safety. So it'll have to be done in the right way, because there's this air corridor thing set up and there's a mandatory 14-day quarantine once you get there that you have to bypass in order to be there for Formula One. So let's see what happens. But yes, a significant weekend, but we should just finish just on that final moment. If Sergio Perez doesn't race in F1 again beyond the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix next year, at least he's had this day of days, isn't it? And just seeing his reactions, sitting on the podium, gathering his thoughts like Pierre Gasly, the positive reaction, even George Russell had a good word for him straight after the race. It's just another feel-good story for F1 in this difficult, difficult season, isn't it, Mark? To see a driver like that who's worked so hard for so long just get something that seemed impossible.
Yeah, there's been so many great stories this season. Given its unpromising beginnings, it's quite remarkable, really. But this weekend's blown all of them out of the water, hasn't it?
And obviously, we also have the addition of the 13th driver this year to stand on the podium in Esteban Ocon as well. So the 13 out of 20 full-time drivers on the podium, that I don't know if I've just had to have had the misfortune of living through the hybrid era, which has been totally monopolised by a few teams, but 13 different podium finishes just feels outrageous. And we have five race winners as well, don't we, this year? Because obviously Perez joins Gasly and Verstappen as one-time race winners this year. So it's just mega. Like the Perez story is a different one to Gasly winning at Monza from a personal and professional point of view, but it's immensely satisfying to see. And it does help when it's a nice guy getting it as well. Someone that you don't sort of mind finding yourself rooting for them every now and again.
Yeah, exactly. And it's good to see people get their just reward. George Russell didn't get it this weekend, but Sergio Perez did. So I guess what the universe takes away from one, it gives to another worthy cause, so to speak. But I'm sure we'll see George Russell up front in a Grand Prix again. And I very much hope we will see Sergio Perez in Formula One for more than one more race. Thanks very much for your time, Mark Hughes and Scott Mitchell. Do head to therace.com and do not forget that hyphen. Loads to read there. Mark Hughes' race analysis, as always, my ever controversial driver ratings. You can join in the debate there where you can tell me why I'm wrong and I'll attempt to justify why I'm not. Scott Mitchell always has all sorts of unexpected things on the website as well. Check out our sister podcasts, including Bring Back V10s and, of course, the Gary Anderson F1 show. And also check out our YouTube channel. Just search for The Race. Some great videos on there. Well, we'll be back next week, unless there's lots and lots of news in the days in between. We did two extra podcasts last time, but we'll be back next week to look back at the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix.